The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
So, for example, we have 74,243 mail-in ballots where there is no clear record of them being sent. And just to be clear, here in the state of Arizona, there's EV-32s and EV-33s. EV-32s is supposed to give a record of when a mail-in ballot is sent, and an EV-33 is supposed to give a record of when the mail-in ballot is received. And so there should be an equal, there should be more EV-32s, more sent out than there are that are received. Specifically with these, we can tie them to a specific individual that was mailed to. And so we have 74,000 where we have them came back from individuals where we don't have a clear indication that they were ever sent out to them.
So there's no record that the ballots went out, but they sure came in. They sure showed up in the ballot box. In other words, they weren't mailed out by the county officials. They were photocopied somewhere along the way by cheaters. That those were those that were trying to steal the election, and they very nearly got away with it. You know what's interesting in following the news from that hearing yesterday? So the evidence is coming in now, and yet still a near total blackout on the major news, the mainstream media. All of my familiar sites that I go to every day, just a tiny handful that even have something to say about this. These are now the preliminary reports coming in. I mean, that was just the tip of the iceberg there. The clip there from the forensic auditor, one of them, Doug Logan. Yeah, 74,000. They just showed up, poof, out of thin air. There's no record of them being mailed out. There's a big record of them just flooding in, though, and being counted. 74,000 of them. You're listening to Stephen Flurry, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Of course, we broadcast every weekday live at 11 a.m. in the central time zone of the United States, 9 a.m. on the West Coast, noontime out on the East Coast. And, of course, we have our special weekend edition that also plays in the heart of Phoenix, Maricopa County, as it happens. And, of course, here in the central part of Oklahoma as well. You know what's amazing about social media? Our friends, you know, the social media police, what was trending yesterday on Twitter, Maricopa County. And then under that, here's the Twitter police. Here's their warning. It says there is no evidence of widespread fraud in Maricopa County's 2020 presidential election results, according to USA Today, Associated Press, and factcheck.org. So even as the evidence is coming in, you have the social media police, you have the major media, the propagandists in the media saying, there's no evidence. There's no evidence. They probably didn't even cover the hearing yesterday. They blot it out. They don't even listen. They don't even report on it. And then they say there's no evidence of fraud. They're all in on it, you see. You start seeing the evidence come in, and it makes me think. It makes me think back to all of those strange events from election night. Going back to November 3rd, you had all of the shenanigans in Fulton County, the water main break, and people being ushered out, and then four or five people continuing on with the counting. The Biden surge as you got into the wee hours of November 4th. And then, of course, that led to the media anointing him king on Saturday, November the 7th. But who can forget? Who can forget in the early hours of that long election night, Fox News just itching to call the state of Arizona for Joe Biden. Even when people in the White House were saying, are you crazy? There's votes still coming in. and the Fox people at the Situation Desk. And I mean, we've saw a report even recently of how it went all the way up even to Rupert Murdoch's office. Yeah, go ahead and call it for Biden. Go ahead and give Arizona to Biden. And they were out front. They were out ahead of the other networks, CNN, MSNBC. This is a little bit from Fox News on election night last year, clip two.
Arizona, are you 100% sure of that call and when you made it and why did you make it?
Absolutely. We made it after basically a half hour of debating. Is it time yet? Because it's been clear for a while that the former vice president is in the lead in Arizona and was most likely to win the state. It has been in the category that we call knowable but not callable for about an hour. We finally called it. Right now, yes, there are some outstanding votes in Arizona. Most of them are coming from Maricopa, where Biden is currently in a very strong position. And many of them are mail-in votes, where we know from our Fox News voter analysis, Biden has an advantage.
Oh, we just know because it's coming from Maricopa. And he's got, that's Biden's territory. And I'm sure they were taking their cues from the election officials that have done everything they can to prevent the forensic audit from going forward. Even as it is, they can't get the passwords to the software, the Dominion hardware and such, the routers. That was revealed yesterday as well. They know. They know that the election was tampered with electronically. There was another one who testified to that yesterday. And yet, here are Maricopa County, the officials there, still dragging their feet, doing anything they can to try to thwart this process. But even with what they have, the ballots in particular, as you just heard from that election official, there's no record of some 74,000 going out, but then they came in. They arrived. And there you had Fox News, just giddy with delight. They wanted Trump out. The propaganda media, they wanted Trump out. A lot of Republicans, they wanted Trump out. And here the evidence now starts coming in, 8-9 months after the fact. And the media won't even cover it, won't even discuss it, not even conservative media. Or if they do, they say that, look, there's no way that this could ever be reversed. We might as well forget about litigating November 3rd and just move forward. Just move forward to 2022. Just move forward to 2024. Well, at least there's a few in the state legislature there in Arizona that are saying, nope, no, we've got to dial this back. Those electors never should have been certified. They should now be recalled. We should have a revote or something. Something to fix this. We can't just go forward and let this go on. The whole world is watching. You had a high-ranking German official yesterday announce that, well, we don't use the machines. We don't use machines for our voting. They know. They know what went on here. And it's like my father has written. Most Republicans know. Even a lot of Democrats know. 74,000 ballots went out. Sorry, they didn't go out, but they showed up anyway. Magic ballots. Fake ballots. That wasn't, as I say, the half of it. Arizona, keep in mind, was decided by just over 10,000 votes. And there you heard that that guy from the election desk on election night say he was just absolutely certain. He absolutely knew. Everything had been analyzed. We got to call it for Biden early. And, of course, that was the first domino to fall. And then all of the swing states, as they got their stealing apparatus in motion, then it all went for Biden. It was started out as a landslide victory for Donald Trump. Except in those 5-6 states. Arizona, Georgia, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, Michigan. And others, too. We'll find out before this is all said and done. New Hampshire, Nevada. 10,000 votes. There were 3,981 who voted in Maricopa County, despite the fact that they registered after October 15th, which means they were disqualified, which means that was illegal. They missed the deadline. That's almost 4,000. Then you have these very, well, I guess I can let some of the individuals who testified speak for themselves. Listen to, again, this is Doug Logan yesterday in the Arizona hearing, clip three.
So we have also seen some interesting things related to the voter rolls. So for example, we have 11,326 people that did not show up on a November 7th version of the voter rolls that should have been, you know, after votes were cast, but then appeared on the December 4th voter rolls. And just be clear, they show as voted in this past election, but they were not a November 7th version of the file, and they did show up on the December 4th version.
So they voted, these 11,000 people, but on the voter roll right after the vote, they weren't there. And then a month later, someone had gone in and corrected the paper trail to say that, well, actually, they were on the voter rolls. They weren't there in early November, but they were there in early December. How many? 11,326. Listen again to Doug Logan yesterday, clip four.
Based on the registration information that we found in the voter rolls, we have 3,981 individuals who show us having voted in this election, and their data shows up in the canvas as having voted in this election. However, they were registered after October 15th.
Which means, as I say, they're disqualified. So that's 4,000. And then he went on to talk about those that were removed from the voter rolls. This is inexplicable. Like, there's 18,000 at least. They were there, they voted, then as soon as the vote's done, they're removed from the voter rolls. Just, I guess, days later. This is clip five.
The last one I have is we have roughly 20,000. I think it was about actually closer to 18,000 who voted in the election and then showed from as being removed from the voter rolls soon after the election. So they were on the voter rolls, they showed as voted, and then they were removed. And there could be a good logical explanation for that, but it was just, it seems like a large number to immediately have after an election be removed.
Why would this happen? So much fishy business. And as I say, I'm just giving you basically the tip of the iceberg. And this, just so you know, this is a preliminary report. You had the president of the Senate, who presided over the hearing yesterday, basically saying, look, we're not accusing anyone of fraud here, but these are some of the initial findings. And the report will follow in a couple of weeks, the full forensic audit report. Then we'll know. What will the media say then? No evidence. They've been saying that for 9 months. They won't even look at it. They won't even examine it. But there they were yesterday, the Twitter police, to tell you, hoping that you wouldn't have anything to do with the hearing, because it was certainly blotted out in the mainstream media. They blot it out, and then they come, they bring their fact checkers to the forefront and say, there's no evidence of any kind of voter fraud. Ben Cotton, he's the cybersecurity expert. Listen to what he had to say about some of the equipment used in Maricopa County. Clip six.
There are a number of things that we know as a matter of fact have occurred that we need to further take that information and validate that information. So, for example, we know through public record, public statements, that an element of the election system was actually compromised or breached during the course of the November 2020 election.
Right, during the presidential election, the equipment, it was breached, compromised. You know, the equipment that we were told was just perfect, not connected to the internet in any way. The machines are, they're almost otherworldly. No problem whatsoever. They now know that it was compromised in some form or fashion. You would think USA Today, you would think those other outfits would be at least curious. Well, you know, they would be curious if the situation was reversed. If it was a Democrat who lost out because of all of this fraudulent activity, because of all of this theft, because of all these magic ballots and faulty equipment. Here's one last clip from Ben Cotton yesterday, clip seven.
Maricopa County officials have repeatedly stated that The election system was a closed system. It did not touch the internet. And by therefore, it could not have commingled with the data from the Sheriff's Department or the Maricopa County other office space. The fact that they have responded back to an official subpoena with the justification that to produce that data would compromise these other aspects of the Maricopa County network that does touch the internet is an admission that maybe things aren't like what they've told the American public.
That's right. They say it's perfect. When they're talking to the cameras, they say everything's perfect. And yet you start looking at the evidence, and what do you find? You find machines that were compromised. You find ballots that showed up by tens of thousands that weren't even sent out. They weren't even mailed to recipients. They just magically showed up. And incredibly, you have even conservative commentators, Fox and other places, saying, look, it's already been litigated. No need to go back and look at this. It's over and done with. Let's just move on. Alan Dershowitz, he was on Fox News last night saying it's never gonna be overturned. If it made its way into the Supreme Court, they would never hear it. I saw a piece at American Thinker this morning, a conservative site usually. Forget about booting Biden. Just forget about it. The fraud of the century. Just forget about it and move on. This author here says, as the forensic audit in Maricopa County winds down, expectations are rising that the defects of the 2020 election will finally be addressed. A recent poll reports that more than half of Republicans expect the audit to bounce President Biden out of office. That's not going to happen. That's not going to happen. Quit getting your hopes up. Quit thinking that this should be fixed, this fraud. Just move on and forget about booting Biden. What does the prophecy say? My father's referred to it so many times. America has no helper. The tide's beginning to turn just a little bit. I mean, with respect, Tucker Carlson, he had the big expose on Wednesday night. About 8 months too late, by the way. I'll get to a few clips from that in a moment. He is obviously an influential commentator. And you've got Secretary Raffensperger. I'm talking about Georgia now. But here Tucker comes out. He exposes the massive fraud in Georgia. And then Raffensperger comes out trying to cover his own tracks. Not that long ago, he was saying how perfect it was in Georgia. And now he's saying everybody in Fulton County ought to be fired. Well, even Tucker. Where was Tucker in January? In February? He was like everyone else at Fox, cowering in fear because of what the higher-ups might do. If you even go there, if you even talk about election fraud, you can't go against Twitter and Facebook, big tech, big media. You can't go against radical Democrats. You can't stand up to the obvious corruption coming from these communists. I'll get to Tucker's in just a moment, but you do look at this and wonder how, if it's going to be the state legislatures to finally stand firm and say, enough, we're going to recall the electors. We're going to decertify what we certified. We're going to have a do-over. I don't know as well as the next guy how it could be fixed or overturned, but how do you just let it go? How do you just turn a blind eye to it? Many, it seems, are quite willing to do that. In the United States of America, this is not some third world nation. The United States of America, the steel of the century. There's a few strong voices. One Arizona state senator, Wendy Rogers, she's demanding that the Biden electors be recalled to Arizona and that there be some kind of new election to see who really won. She tweeted out yesterday, I've heard enough. With the tens of thousands of ballots mailed without being requested and over 10,000 people who voted after registering after November 3rd, The failure of Maricopa to turn over 40% of the machines, the passwords that Dominion still refuses to turn over, and tens of thousands of unauthorized queries demonstrating how insecure the election was. I call for the Biden electors to be recalled to Arizona, and a new election must be conducted. It says Arizona's electors must not be awarded fraudulently, and we need to get this right. See, there's a lot of conservative voices that say, well, go ahead and reward them anyway for their fraudulent activity, for the theft of the century. Just give them the victory. There's a few at the state level that are saying, no, not so fast. And this is, as I say, this is just the beginning. And it's just one state. It's just Arizona. Put it together with what Tucker revealed the other night, or at least with what he's finally exposing. After all these many months, this was from his show, as I say, on Wednesday, clip 9.
So here's what we know tonight, factually. At least 36 batches of mail-in ballots from the November election were double counted in Fulton County. That's a total of more than 4,000 votes. Those numbers come from a group called Voter GA, which along with Bob Chiele sued to get them. The final tally from the double counts we know about amounts to more than 3,300 votes for Joe Biden and 865 votes for Donald Trump. Now, before you dismiss Bob Chiele and Voter GA as dishonest partisan actors, keep in mind that the strongly left-of-center Atlanta Journal-Constitution appears to agree with this, at least in outline. The newspaper reviewed the available digital ballot images independently and concluded that hundreds of ballots were improperly duplicated.
Hundreds. I think as many as 4,000 as he covered in that report. And then as Tucker went on the other night, he was showing you on video the evidence side by side of these duplicate ballots. Now, again, not one or two, but thousands. Georgia, just like Arizona, decided by 11, 12,000 votes. Here's Tucker from Wednesday, clip 12.
Surveillance footage obtained by Voter GA appears to show large numbers of ballots being scanned multiple times. Pay attention in the tape we're showing you to the woman wearing yellow at the desk. According to Voter GA, she slides ballots into a scanning machine, removes the ballots, and then reinserts the same ballots. This happens multiple times. The question is, how many times were those ballots counted? Was each vote counted more than once? Fulton County won't answer that question. Now, one way to know the answer would be to check what are called audit tally sheets. Tellingly, for months after the presidential election, Fulton County failed to provide more than 100,000 of those tally sheets, including 50,000 of them for mail-in ballots. When Voter GA finally forced Fulton County to turn over the tally sheets, the conclusion was stunning. Here's what the audit found. Quote, 7 falsified audit tally sheets containing fabricated vote totals. For example, a batch containing 59 actual ballot images for Joe Biden and 42 for Donald Trump was reported as 100 for Biden and 0 for Trump. The 7 batches of ballot images with 554 votes for Joe Biden, 140 votes for Donald Trump, and 11 votes for Joe Jorgensen had tally sheets in the audit falsified to show 850 votes for Biden, 0 votes for Trump, and 0 votes for Jorgensen. Wait, did you just follow that? How is that not flat-out criminal fraud? We'd love to know, because it certainly sounds like flat-out criminal fraud.
And what's amazing in all of this is that what he's pointing out there 8 months ago, that's what the deranged conspiracy theorists were saying. That's what Rudy Giuliani was exposing. And as I recall, he lost his law license in New York State for exposing this. It's nice to finally hear Tucker coming out with no doubt something that's a little bit controversial at his network. Good for him to finally speak up, but you have to wonder, where was this commentary 5, 6, 7, 8 months ago? Where was Mike Pence and the Republicans on January the 6th? The Democrats, they've pulled off quite the coup. Using the so-called insurrection to just stamp out all dissent, any talk of actually examining these ballots. And good for some of these states and these organizations in Georgia, in Arizona, for demanding a full forensic audit. That's, as I say, a pretty influential voice when you hear Tucker, when you hear Tucker now exposing it, as he did the other night. When we come back, we'll play a couple more clips from Tucker's segment the other night, and then also transition into our Bible study for today on building the personality of a king. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. You can submit some feedback to the show if you like. Write us at td@thetrumpet.com. We'll be right back.
The Trumpet Daily. Are we living in the last days? Some dismiss the notion as fanatical, but world leaders and news analysts are issuing warnings that are becoming more and more dire. Could Bible prophecies about the last days actually be accurate? Our brochure can help guide you through the relevant news and history and help you compare these events to what the Bible says. Are we living in the last days? This brochure is available for free right now at thetrumpet.com. The Trumpet Daily.
We've obtained photographs showing what went on during the recount process for mail-in ballots in Fulton County. These pictures were taken by a whistleblower who participated in the recount. She said she noticed something odd as she did. None of the ballots that she saw had any creases on them. You can see the stacks of unfolded ballots on your screen now. That's strange because, of course, mail-in ballots need to be bent in order to be mailed in. These ballots clearly had never been inside an envelope. And then the whistleblower noticed something else. All of the ballots, the whistleblower tells us, have been filled out by a printer, not by hand. And many of them supported the exact same candidates, Democrats, including Joe Biden. Voter GA detected a series of other apparent irregularities in the recount. The group's audit found, for example, that, quote, over 200 Fulton County mail-in ballot images contained votes that were not included in the hand count audit results for the November election.
That's Tucker from his show Wednesday night talking about the duplicate ballots. You have to wonder why there weren't any of these stacks that just suddenly appeared in favor of Donald Trump. It all tilted in the direction of Joe Biden, didn't it? Well, it certainly did in Fulton County, Maricopa County, Philadelphia County, Wayne County. One more clip from Wednesday, clip 14.
Keep in mind, once again, the results in the state of Georgia were decided by fewer than 13,000 votes. It was a close race. Every vote mattered. And then there's this. An elections expert called Mark Davis analyzed data from the post office. He found that nearly 35,000 Georgia voters moved out of their county of residence more than a month prior to Election Day. They were ineligible to vote, and yet they did. They still voted in their old county. That is illegal. It's not a small thing. Violating election law is something we should care about. And by law, their vote should have been excluded from the total. But they were not excluded. Why are we okay with that?
Good question. Why are a lot of conservatives okay with this? Just got to move on. The Supreme Court's never going to hear this. So say the talking heads last night. We've just got to move on. We can't concentrate on booting Biden from office. We've got to think about 2022, 2024, about the only one who's out there saying, look, if they can get away with this in 2020, they'll do the same thing in 2 years. They'll do the same thing in 4 years. Who knows how many years they've been doing this? These machines. These vote fraud machines in counties like Philadelphia and Fulton County and Wayne County. Secretary Raffensperger in Georgia, he tweeted this out yesterday, I believe. Fulton County's continued failures have gone on long enough with no accountability. Rick Barron and Ralph Jones, Fulton's registration chief, must be fired and removed from Fulton's elections leadership immediately. Fulton's voters and the people of Georgia deserve better. And that's from the man who's in charge of it. He's in charge of Fulton County election officials. He's a state secretary, the secretary of Georgia. He's responsible for the whole election all over the state. And what was he saying together with his assistant for months? Gabe Sterling, Jeff Duncan, even Governor Kemp. All of them. It was perfect. We've never had such a perfect election. And now he's calling for all these officials in Fulton County to be fired? What a change in tune. He's trying to cover his tracks. This is from the Georgia Star News. The statement from Raffensperger follows a revelation that ballots were scanned multiple times in the recount that followed the November 2020 election. Further, voter GA and Garland Favorito, organizers of the lawsuit asking for an audit of the ballots, alleged that 1,539 batch files containing 100 mail-in ballots each, 923 contained votes incorrectly reported in the official November 3rd results as compared to the reported audit totals. Discrepancies all over the place. In Georgia, in Arizona, and finally being exposed, if you know where to look. On the whole, it's blotted out. It's being blotted out. Well, as my father has said, you can go back to the March issue of the Trumpet magazine, the April edition as well, where we talk about America having no helper. And what's going to happen for Donald Trump to come back into office? It's going to take a miraculous hand of God to do that. But as part of it, as my father has explained, there will be an exposure of this fraud, this election theft, the steal of the century. Earlier this week, we have our summer educational program going on, and by the way, the weather has just been, speaking of miracles and God's miraculous hand, just driving to the studio this morning at 11 a.m. on a hot Oklahoma day, or what's usually a hot Oklahoma day in the middle of July, it was 80 degrees, and it's been like that for the entirety of the camp thus far. And I know there's some pretty oppressive drought conditions out west. People even dying in states like Oregon and Washington because the heat's been so, so oppressive. But God really has blessed the climate and the weather, the occasional rain that we've been getting here in central Oklahoma. The campus is as beautiful as ever, and the temperatures and the rolling clouds, certainly much, much milder than we're typically used to in July and August here in Oklahoma. Well, I talked to the young people and, of course, the workers as well with them about just the importance of developing our personalities. My father's made the point before about how it's not enough to receive this instruction, this training that God has prepared for us, but that we also have to be skilled communicators. We have to be able to take God's message and deliver it. You think about the impact that Jesus had on the multitudes that he encountered. There's the verses that talk about the hearts of the disciples, how that they burned within them after Jesus Christ departed the scene. They missed him terribly. The time that they had with him, the training that they enjoyed with him. The Bible talks about, well, we can look at Hebrews 10 here in just a moment, but it talks about not forsaking the opportunity that you have to assemble together, to be with God's family, to serve in the family. Proverbs talk about iron sharpening iron, how that we can help each other. It says in verse 24, well, Hebrews 10 and verse 23, it says, let us hold fast the profession of our faith without wavering, and let us consider one another to provoke unto love and to good works. So consider the other guy. You can find similar language in Philippians 2, verses 4 and 5. Consider the others. Be a servant. I touched on that subject recently as well. But coming back to Hebrews 10, verse 25 says, not forsaking the assembling of ourselves together, as the manner of some is, but exhorting one another, and so much the more as you see the day approaching. See, fellowship one with another, and so much the more as you see the return of Christ approaching. It's so important, that time that we're able to spend with God's family. We tell the college students as they come into the AC training, to really make the most of their dating opportunities, to date widely, to date as many people as possible so that you can do it as an act of service, but that you might also grow and develop your own personality along the way. Don't forsake those opportunities to come together. I mentioned the example of Jesus Christ, his ministry, how that he attracted these huge crowds, largely because of the miracles that he was performing, the healings and so on. But they also came out to just hear him speak, to hear him talk, to get as close to him as they could. He was a persuasive teacher. He had a magnetic personality. People love to be around Jesus Christ. Look at that unusual account in Luke chapter 2, where it talks about what he was growing in from his early teens, even before that, as a 12-year-old, all the way up through the beginning of his ministry. Luke 2 and verse 52, it says, "And Jesus increased in wisdom and stature and in favor with God and man." So he increased in wisdom, in stature, and in favor with God and man. People loved to be around Jesus Christ. If you look at that word stature, it can mean maturity, to grow, suitable age for anything. And then the word favor. Again, Jesus increased in wisdom, stature, and favor. Properly, it means, this is according to Thayer's, that which affords joy, pleasure, delight, sweetness, charm, loveliness, grace of speech. That's what it meant for Christ to grow in favor with fellow man, and of course with God too. You can back up in Luke 2, look at verse 40. It says, "And the child grew." This is after at the age of 12 and into his teen years. It says, "And the child grew and waxed strong in spirit, filled with wisdom, and the grace of God was upon him." This was a remarkable young child, a 12-year-old that had no problem mixing it up with adults, that had no problem being away from his parents for a time while he was talking to the elites of his day, the experts. Luke 24:32, that's where it says, "Did not our hearts burn within us while he talked with us?" By the way, that's how the disciples reacted to Jesus Christ's departure. As I say, they were like sponges. They really wanted to just absorb as much of Christ and his way of life, his personality. They wanted to absorb as much of it as they could during that 3.5-year ministry, during that period of training. This is a quote from Herbert Armstrong going back to 1951. He said, "Your personality is a power. Your personality is a power if you develop and train it so as to charm, influence, persuade others rightly, to bring pleasure and encouragement and sunshine and inspiration to others, and to lead them as they ought to be led." Mr. Armstrong says, "A charming, captivating, and persuasive personality is one of the greatest forces for good with which an all-wise God endowed you." What a force for good a charming and persuasive personality can be. Your personality is a power. It's a power. Look sometime at John 11. Just look at the third verse in John 11 and verse 5. And it points out there that Jesus loved those individuals, Lazarus, and then Mary and Martha. And the scriptures relate that he loved Martha, and he loved the other gal with her as well, the sister. How about that? Scripture's noting that here comes Christ, and oh, by the way, he loves so-and-so, and he loves so-and-so, and he loves so-and-so. They knew it. They knew that he loved them. They knew that he was not thinking about his own things, but he was thinking about the things of others. That's what inspired so many people about the ministry of Christ. That's why their hearts burned within them. when he was gone from the scene. Look at Matthew 6. I'll just read you this account. Matthew chapter 6, and verse starting in verse 30. As I said, he attracted large throngs of people. Jesus did. In Mark chapter 6. I got the wrong gospel. Mark chapter 6, and starting in verse 30. It says here, and the apostles gathered themselves together unto Jesus and told him all things, both what they had done and what they had taught. It says, and he said to them, come ye yourselves apart into a desert place and rest a while, for there were many coming and going, and they had no leisure so much as to eat. It was just that busy and hectic. Christ was a busy man. There were a lot of demands on his time. It says in verse 32, and they departed into a desert place by ship privately. And the people saw them departing, and many knew him and ran afoot there out of all the cities, and out went them, it says, and came together unto them or unto him. So they chased him down, in other words. Verse 34, and Jesus, when he came out, saw much people and was moved with compassion toward them, because they were as sheep not having a shepherd. And he began to teach them many things. See, what an example. What an attitude. Christ was a people person. Many of us probably would have run away and said, hey, I've been with the multitudes for long enough. Let's sneak away to a private place. That's essentially what he said. Let's go away for a private gathering. And rest up and get rejuvenated. But the people saw him and were running along the shoreline, I guess, chasing him down. And your Bible says Jesus had compassion. He loved these people. He wanted to help these people. What a personality. What a spirit. What a spirit of love, it says. And when the day was now far spent, his disciples came unto him and said, this is a desert place. And now the time is far past, and so it says, send them away, but that they may go into the country round about and into the villages and buy themselves bread, for they have nothing to eat. And notice verse 37, and he answered and said unto them, give you them to eat. And they said unto him, shall we go and buy 200 a penny worth of bread and give them to eat? And he said to them, how many loaves have you? And see, and when they knew, they said, 5 and 2 fish. Well, you're familiar with the tremendous miracle. Jesus feeding the multitudes miraculously. The disciples said, hey, shouldn't we send them away so that we can get something to eat and they can be on their own for dinner? And Christ's response was, no, let's feed them. Let's feed all of them. Let's just spend the evening with them as well. That's our Savior. That's our King, the King of Kings and Lord of Lords. What an example he set as our perfect example, the perfect leader, the kind of leader you don't see in the world today, one that actually was serving not himself, but all others. That's the kind of leader that we're in training to become. We have a future with this King Priest. We in God's church, we're in training to assist him, to help him, to be his helpmeet for all eternity. And so we need to develop the personality of our husband, our High Priest, our Savior and King, Jesus Christ. We're here as the future royal leaders of tomorrow. Notice what Paul had to say about reaching people on whatever level they happen to be at. This is in 1 Corinthians 9 and verse 19. Paul said, for though I be free from all men, yet have I made myself servant unto all, that I might gain the more. Paul made himself a servant to all, so that he could win people over. He really was concerned about being the most perfect human instrument possible in order to attract people to God's way of life. As far as he was concerned, the servant matters. You could step back away from this and say, well, God, you know, John 6:44, God has to open someone's mind, and surely I can't do God's job, which is true. And yet if God uses us as an instrument to deliver his message or to present the message to young people or whoever, we want to do it in the most persuasive way possible. We want to do it with a kingly personality, if at all possible. There's plenty of work to be done and as far as developing that personality of a king. But it's something to think about. Paul said in verse 20, And unto the Jews I became as a Jew, that I might gain the Jews. To them that are under the law, as under the law, that I might gain them that are under the law. And to them that are without the law, as without law, that I might gain them that are without the law. See, whatever their background, if they don't know anything about God's truth, or maybe they come from a Jewish upbringing, whatever it is, I want to reach them. I want to reach them. And Paul says about himself, to the weak became I as weak, that I might gain the weak. I am made all things to all men, that I might by all means save some. I want to reach everybody. I want to be all things to all people. Paul humbled himself. He didn't look down on certain groups. He didn't say, well, you're just the ordinary folk. You're not educated enough for this. He pleaded with all people everywhere. He made himself all things to all people. He didn't criticize others because of their background, their upbringing, their religion, their social class, whatever it might have been, their race, their ethnicity. Matthew 22 and verse 36. And really, when you talk about personality development, so much of it just happens when we're obedient to God's laws. When we're obeying God's laws, good things happen. That's how we grow, isn't it? Verse 36, it says in Matthew 22, Master, which is the great commandment in the law? And Jesus said unto him, You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind. It says, this is the first and great commandment, and the second is like unto it. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. On these two commandments hang all the law and the prophets. See, it all boils down to these laws, obeying these laws of God. Notice what it says in Tomorrow's World. This is from an article in 1971. It says here, Jesus Christ was filled with joy, even though at the same time he was a man of sorrows. And why? Because he loved all human beings, and he saw the way they were going. He saw how they were destroying themselves, how they were bringing unhappiness and emptiness, fear and worry, poverty, sickness, disease, and sufferings on themselves. He thereby shared their sufferings. He was a man of sorrows. He was sorrowful for them. But, and listen to this, but he was a man who was happy inside. He was setting us an example of the kind of life that we should live. You do look at this world. You see the suffering and the agony. And you sorrow for people. You have compassion, just like Jesus had on that multitude. Chasing after him. They wanted to just get any little piece of his ministry they could get. And he had compassion on them because they had no shepherd. They had no one to guide them. They had no one to point them in the direction of God. And so he would do that. He loved people. That's why he was so happy. And so it says in Acts 20 and verse 35 that it's more blessed to give than to receive. What a powerful and towering principle of God's teaching and instruction. Just put yourself out there in service to others. Remember that noble motto, as I covered with you the other day, I serve cheerfully, as we added, to it at this camp. Serve God cheerfully. Serve God's family cheerfully. And watch your personality development just take off and grow. As you build the personality of a king, there's a proverb that says, a man that has friends must show himself to be friendly. You have to do your part. You have to work at it. There's a quote in I Dare You. This is a book that we're referring the young people to here at the summer educational program. It says, I dare you to develop that magnetic personality that will lead and inspire others. You can have that personality if you have a great enough desire. You can show improvement in this area if you really and truly desire it. If you have a strong enough desire, you can grow and develop and build the personality of a king. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. If you'd like to submit some feedback to the show, you can write us, td@thetrumpet.com. When we come back, we'll conclude today's show with a few emails that have come in recent days. We'll be right back.
The Trumpet Daily. Is marriage on the way out? Is the institution of the home, with its family life, to disappear from society? How and when did the institution of marriage originate? Does it, after all, serve any necessary purpose? Why Marriage, Soon Obsolete, takes an in-depth look at the institutions of marriage, the home and family life, and reveals a startling, even shocking truth, which has been altogether overlooked by science, by religion, by education, and by society. To learn more, please visit thetrumpet.com.
The Trumpet Daily.
A couple of emails quickly. This here says, good afternoon from New South Wales, Australia. Thank you for this wonderful program. I was speaking to my mother today. The aged care facility she is in is yet again in lockdown, and we are no longer able to visit. It says residents there are scared and pressured to have their flu and COVID vaccines. I can see why. They are scared, as if relying on the mainstream media. I would be terrified too. But she said today, with all this paranoia going on around her, that your show keeps her sane. She thinks the show should be called The Trumpet Sanity. So how's that for a new title for the program? I thought it had a nice ring to it, says this particular listener. Another one here says, this is a terrifying upside-down world in which we live. The work of God through the PCG is the only ray of sunshine in this dark world. This work gives me the hope I need in order to carry on day by day and to make the changes in mind and body to draw closer to the living God. I thank you all. Another one here says, enjoyed the show again today, and especially the Bible study portion on Colossians 3. Your mind on setting your mind on the things above, it says, I'm finally able now to set aside my lunch hour each working day and tune in to the Trumpet Daily. Definitely felt like you can't miss this for any reason. Thanks for all the effort and the reporting, including the short video clips you provide on the show. She also says, yes, the Celtic Throne performance was amazing, and she loves listening to the feedback from viewers as well. Well, that's all that we have time for on today's program. As I said earlier, if you'd like to submit some feedback, we'd love to hear from you. You can write us td@thetrumpet.com. We'd love to hear about your listening habits, where you're from, and what you like about the show in particular. You can also call our operators if you'd like to subscribe to the Trumpet Magazine, Tomorrow's News Today. That's 1-866-930-3024. You are listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We thank you for joining us on today's show. Thanks for joining us all week, and we'll see you next week.